Good evening, everyone. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday night, and this is the ABD guidebook by EJ Gold. And we've been really glorying in it for the last 43 weeks now, and it's a worthy effort. Part of what we do is we just take a time every week for an hour here in this class on Wednesday night, and we focus our attention on something. And we have a busy week. We go and we do tons of different things. But then for a moment here, for an hour, we bring together these individuals that I'm working with and focus our attention. That's what we're doing, Pat. And the material is available to us, and it yields back something.
Yes, and I'm going to subvert the normal plan here. I have a number of announcements to make and some statements, and then I'm going to welcome this group, our working group together, to respond either via the chat as we currently have our forum, or by email, or by phone with each other if that should occur. So one of the members of our community has been put into the hospice care situation, which if you're familiar with how that works in this country, it's a designation that is offered by a doctor. It has insurance and legal ramifications, but mostly for family members, basically the statement is something along the lines of, oh, shucks, it's really happening. And I'm taking this opportunity to speak about this evening before we launch into one of my favorite chambers, 13. And we'll get into that in just a moment. I'm taking this opportunity to say that every moment you have the possibility to do something with your life is an opportunity you do not have when you're dead. So the oh shucks response that sometimes happens with family members when they go, oh, he's not going to get any better. Oh, no, I should blah, blah, blah. Whatever that list is, that's the list you want to clear out of your way for yourself and your loved ones now. Because if you remove the potential of another day, you have the opportunity to be present in the now. That's what the Book of the Dead speaks of constantly, and that is what the practices in Practical Work on Self are about. And the group work.
Do we have that book here, by the way? Chapter 20. Here, see, there's a copy up there. Keep going. Sorry.
The group work that we do on Wednesday nights with the American Book of the Dead guidebook offers an immediate practice. And David's mentioned this, and I've mentioned this, and I believe even Ivan's mentioned it. Read aloud to another and read aloud to yourself. And receive readings, because the reverberations, and it's not my place to speak of this, but there is another community member who has a child who's received the reverberations of the American Book of the Dead to the degree that they were able to save their own life, because they recognized viscerally the signs. I feel like we have opportunity, And sometimes we don't make much of it. So I've made a little point of making something of it. And that's it.
We need a copy of Practical Work on Self.
Yes, we do. Here.
Yeah, it was hiding. I know. It has a way of doing that, Dan.
Invisible, not plain sight. Invisible.
So, on Sundays at noon in the ashram, we're going through Practical Work on Self, and we are on Chapter 24. Okay?
Yes.
So, we're on Chapter 24, and in Chapter 24, which you should read that anyway. When we were doing the morning practical work on self every bloody day, and we just had to read it over and over and over again. That was the job.
Yeah.
That was a great, great ritual to do too. Fabulous. So we weren't studying it; we were reading it as a script. And I guarantee you that in 10 years. That's what we'll be doing with a lot of this literature. Okay. Now this one is not my copy, so it's not marked up like my copy is. So and if you have a copy of Practical Work on Self, I'd like you to grab it, and I want to read some things in response to what Pat is telling us here.
Proclaiming adjective.
So here's the interesting exercise that encompasses what Pat has proclaimed for us. We are on the path. We are on the path of transformation. That's why we're here. That's what we do, and that's what we have. And many of us have crafted our lives along that manner. And Pat, and Chapter 24 is profound in that regard. It's like a summary of it. It's not for the faint of heart.
No.
How would you like to do the first full paragraph? Opens up Chapter 20. How would you like to discover just how precious life really is? But only in your last moment, just as the machine is taking its last few breaths. What would you learn about life? What would you appreciate suddenly that you had never really appreciated, maybe never even noticed before this moment? And then it goes on to discuss that. And then on page 180, if you're following along in your hymnals, the second paragraph begins as follows. To die is to move past something that will never come again in exactly the same way. All great philosophers practice for their last hour of life. I will give you the exact exercise which they use to practice for their final hour on earth. Take care not to change even word of this instruction. Now, look back at the last hour that has just passed as if it had been your last hour on earth. And you have just now realized that you have died. First, ask yourself if you are satisfied with how you have used this last precious hour of life. Now return to the stream of organic life and set yourself the aim during the next hour, if you live that long, to extract just a little more quality from life than you had during the previous hour. Determine to awaken the machine just a little more, to have just a little more presence in the present, a little more inner fire. That's Practical Work on Self, Chapter 24. That's what we're studying. thank you for that. And we're studying it this next Sunday again. Is Grocky online? No, not really. Anyway, so right now what Pat is telling us is that one of our long-term community members.
Yes, it's Lily Nova, and Lily has a fairly good situation to be ending her last hours of life and on Earth in. She does not have any family members other than this community currently living here with her. So I've had the opportunity, the privilege, and the responsibility to be in the place of her family, which means every little thing that happens to or about Lily is something that I'm involved in. And that gives me the continuing opportunity to always put myself in her shoes. And that's not to say that you need to go do that. It just means that you have to know that your opportunities at some point are going to end. And what did you do with them?
I just wanted to underline a couple of sentences in that proclamation, which is the opportunity to put yourself in their shoes. Is that what you said?
Yes.
So, first of all, the courage to do that is quite something. I'm not asking you to respond to that, but that means that you have this, you are surrendering to be in that position for that moment. You're surrendering your position, and for that moment you're just saying, okay, take me. You know, Yama may come along at any minute, and it may come along at any minute for us too. And so Pat puts herself in that position while she's doing this hospice work, end-of-life work, rather, with Lily. And I just wanted to emphasize that, okay?
Yeah. And I reflect it back for our group here because I don't expect that everyone has that opportunity at the moment. You may have had that situation in the past. I know Ivan has, and I know that David has. And you basically are straddling the two worlds at the same time, which is, you know, your loved one is traveling on, minus human biological machine, at a certain moment. That moment is not necessarily known. And they may not have too much that they care about in terms of maintaining a human biological machine, and so you're kind of in the balance position. Where do you put your emphasis? What is important? What should take your time and attention? How do you decide that? So before I came here this evening, I arrived with my container of the frozen chicken broth that I had said yesterday I would bring over, because the food situation is not going down so easily, and I know Lily has in the past really enjoyed chicken broth. And it's a frozen container because I don't carry it around to thaw all day long. And so when I offer this, the situation is not just, is this going to give her more life sustenance? Is this going to give her pleasure? Does this have something to do with where she is at the moment? And how much can I give up what my expectation is about what this situation is going to be?
Nice.
And that was thrilling to me because Lily grabbed me and, you know, she was glad I was there and the person helping her was glad I was there. And Lily needed assistance holding her head up in order to sip some of the chicken broth, which was something she did want. And that was a position I could put myself in fairly well knowing that that would be a useful thing, a helpful thing for her, but not necessarily in the way in which, yes, the aide was glad to make this work. So one of the comments that I heard, it's been a week or two ago since we had a little meeting with some of the LRS folks in the community here, Claude made a statement which I find to be excellent and true. You don't know how or why, but things do seem to work out for the better. And he gave some examples in relation to his own mother's passage. And I recall this is something that does occur. And that is an opening statement for you guys to put your pieces in there.
You want to say something, Ivan? You okay? You know, we're I don't know who's online right now. Say who's online. Say it into the phone.
Well, so far it looks like we have Molly Midway, Silverdale, Lara 34, Doug Bryan, Lance Leeson, DePaulse, and Muscle Spark, and a few others who haven't typed anything in yet.
Haven't said their name or anything in line. So, you know, we're all, I don't know the age of everybody that's there, but of the people I know, we're no spring chickens anymore. No, we're not in our youth. So we tend to be, our friends are starting to pass away, as they say. So death surrounds us a little bit more. And I guess because of my work with Practical Work on Self right now and what's happening, it's we are on a tipping point. We're always on a tipping point. And I don't know at what moment I will be taken. Each of us owes a death, it seems, and no matter what you do at that moment, however you might be surrounded, you are on your own at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you, that's just the facts. That's just the way it works. That's, and so, but in between now and that moment, that particular moment when Yama comes grabbing my hind tail, or taps me on the shoulder, that's what I'm expecting. I turn around and there's Yama staring at me. And you know, it's like, until that moment, what can I do? You know, and I guess I went down the whole road of, not that interested in changing the world, but I can change myself and my inner presence and attention. And then whatever comes around, whatever forms around me is that which I'm supposed to work with that day.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with it.
I think you've I had a voice lesson this afternoon with a fellow from Finland.
Oh, yeah.
And when I had first met him about 10 years ago, after I'd had my first lesson, I said, boy, this is like the yoga of the voice. And today I said, this is like economics of sound.
Nice.
Because what you're interested in is the manipulation in the most efficient and balanced manner you don't necessarily want to give your all, but you want your all to be there behind what you do give. And this was a new learning for me today. I've got to move the microphone a little bit away. We used to do this exercise where you are doing a percussive blowing. Today the blowing was the same amount, but with no outer.
Wow.
Same amount of air coming out, same quality of pitch, not as much force.
Oh, man. So you get into that kind of subtlety because you have to work your attention and presence, because if you work your attention and presence in something like this, then you get to see more. Everything is infinite. Every area you look at is going to be infinite.
Yeah.
The voice, movement, if you're a dancer, if you're
a
guitar. I always keep coming back to this thing with Yo-Yo Ma. I mean, the guy's been playing a cello for 40 years, and he seems excited every time I watch him perform.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same 3 feet of strings. But he keeps doing it. So how are we doing? Are we penetrating our lives in the same way with the same kind of mastery that Pat has come to with voice? Are you penetrating? That's your canvas, in a sense, isn't it?
It is what you have.
You
have a life. In whatever regard you hold that, that's still the only opportunity you have for work. And every moment you don't take that opportunity, it's not given again. So whatever method,
let's get Ivan the phone.
The phone.
Okay, and we're going to read the first four paragraphs quickly.
It doesn't go into there.
And now you're going to see how appropriate this particular book might be. So we're at the 13th book. I'll begin. Okay. The 13th book of the dead, called the Book of Ur-Razak. 1. It is I who provide the nourishment for all creations. There are inner and outer sustaining substances. And the outer is for the body, the mind, and the feelings. They are the food, the atmosphere, and impressions needed by the material form in order to continue and to develop according to the perfect plan.
Are the various kinds of disclosures of knowledge and transmissions of understanding which exist for the perception of the inner spiritual consciousness.
3. And the outer is necessary in order to provide the vessel for the perfection of the being, but the inner is the exact nourishment necessary for the perfection of the spiritual soul.
4. And these are the foods which nourish eternal life, and they both are available, the outer and the inner, but they are given freely and amply to some and to others according to their merit. only a small quantity. When it is accepted with both hands, it flows without bounds or limit. When it is accepted with both hands, it flows.
Yes.
So this is the, I think, the key to chapter 24. How do you live the last hour of your life? When you look back, and one thing that's really critical here, and this is why I wanted Grocky to see if he was on, but he's not, is you look back and you go, oh, wow, you know, that was a shitty hour. That's not your job to evaluate. It says look back. It doesn't say conclude.
No.
It just says look back. And so if we read throughout the ABD and now the ABD guidebook, one of the tools that we are to perfect, we'll see this in a few more books, is of this incredible objectivity. This, just what happened? And then as a great strategist, you look at it and you go, oh, okay, got it. I'm going to do this the next hour. Because it's every hour that we can craft our lives. And when we have this is the opportunity that's given to us. So this is a stirring book, and I think we should go ahead and read the, so now we move. But this idea of nourishment, you nourish yourself. The nourishment comes from you. You craft it. You can craft the external nourishment, but if the inner nourishment is waiting to come, in some cultures, of course, they call that, and grace is given on to you.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that in some of the earlier books, too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Grace has a part. Five.
Go ahead.
And on the 10th day, if they are still unrecognized, then they will come to you again. So, hear this instruction with care and recognize the truth. Do not fall into error through belief in their reality or form.
Six. And on this day, the violent guide of the order of the precious gemstone of the world Karatas shall appear in a flaming halo of light, and he shall appear within the guide who is before you, and in his right hand he shall hold a gemstone of black, which shall draw into itself any who have not recognized the form as the form of primal consciousness.
Seven. And he shall appear hypnotically compelling to you, and his stone of black shall draw you within itself, and you shall be cast down as a solid form in the world, except you recognize him as a form of consciousness.
And be not afraid, nor be in terror of him, and he is the form of the consciousness of the void, which is yourself, and he is therefore your own form, and he is a guide through whom you can realize your own genuine nature in spiritual consciousness.
Nine. And He is your own experience, which you have cast out from yourself and placed into the world. And he is in reality the formless endlessness of your own consciousness and being.
And you must have faith now in the absolute truth and not fall into error, and believe only in the reality of absolute reality.
11. And in the moment that you recognize the form as your own form of consciousness that you have cast outside yourself, you will be at that moment liberated by proclaiming him as your own, and you will be one with him and realize yourself as the endless void of spiritual consciousness.
So what's the trumpet sound that's coming through in this? Over and over and over again.
In case you don't already get the picture, let me be politely repetitive and remind you that all phenomena is illusion. So the consideration, the compassion of this chamber is to recall to you yourself in the form that you currently are and how it looks to you at the moment, knowing that your capacity for confronting and encountering this truth about yourself is likely to be beyond your current balance, and you need to be reminded. It's the most precious thing that I finally grasped out of this chapter was it's a compassionate act to be repeatedly reminded of your situation, because you're not getting it. It's not blame. It's courtesy.
In 11, and in the moment that you recognize the form as your own form of consciousness that you have cast outside yourself. So I read this stuff, Pat, and I heard you talk about this before. It says in 5, it says, and on the 10th day, if they are still unrecognized, then they will come to you again. And you know, but like, we've heard this before, too, in other teachings where it says, you know, you create your own reality. I would think that there's a huge part of me that just doesn't believe that.
You just can't take that in.
I don't believe it. I don't live my life like that. And I go, because then I look around me, I see the stuff that's happening, and I go, see the stuff that's happening out there?
Yeah, that's not me.
You know?
That's not me.
And yet the invitation, and I say invitation here, Ivan, is that in fact is what is occurring. And maybe it's easier to digest when we read about it, or when you're in the Bardos, then
you'll get it.
Here's what you're supposed to do.
In the Bardo.
But, so is it possible, Ivan and Pat, that I'm doing the same thing? Am I creating my own reality here? Or, I mean, this Caracas and the stone and the bad guys?
The basic question of that is, an answer to your question, is the prayer at meals, which is, there was nothing with which to make the world out of myself. The world was made around 70.
So when I think about that, I think, how does it drive to this whole thing about attention and presence and all of that? And what I started to get when I was thinking through this chapter here, I thought, if I can hold my attention and presence, then whatever is being given to me is the karmic task before me today, this hour. Like, I have a schedule of things I'm going to do tomorrow.
Right?
Yes. And the language, I think, is really precise here.
Okay.
It says that in the moment that you recognize the form, in the moment, I can say at the moment, in the moment, that you recognize the form as your own form of consciousness that you have cast outside yourself, you will be at that moment liberated.
How about that?
Yeah.
So, what is meant by liberation here, George? I mean, what do we mean? And then you're liberated.
Are you there, George?
You know, I'll tell you, because you're not coming across on the microphone, I went to mute and then was listening on my computer, and as you know, there's about a 10-second delay.
Okay. Is this helping at all? Can you hear through the phone?
No, not really.
Can you hear me better than Pat?
No, actually, I don't know. This is, you know, this doesn't often happen, but tonight it just seems to be tough.
You know, one thing that's different is that thing on over here, the... What's that thing called? I don't know
what's the
technology. You know, that extra speaker.
The PA system? I don't think so.
No, we haven't had that for a while.
Not on, right?
No.
Yeah. Well, okay. Silverdale, we're looking at verse 11.
Right.
And we're posing a question to you about what does it mean when we use that word liberation?
Well, you know, when I think of liberation, I put it within the context of the formulation to die before you die. So what we're attempting to do in our efforts toward transformation is to arouse and awaken initially our essential self, or educate and orient it, and we feed the growth and development of our essential self through the gradual diminishment of our historical personality. We shift the center of gravity, and in the moment that we kind of take the last step on earth and the first step in heaven, we become liberated. Now, what we are trying to do in the course of studying this book is educate and inform our essential self. And working with Lily, Pat, of course, provides both of you an opportunity to practice that in real life. But in the meantime, attending on Wednesday night gives all of us an opportunity to I like something you said very early on, Pat, which is, just the hearing of the word alone is enough to transform us, even if our ordinary consciousness can't quite comprehend what we're trying to experience. But gradually over time, we do grow. Just like an infant that's been born, we can't believe that it's ever going to walk or that it's ever going to talk or that it's ever going to go out and get a job. But it does happen gradually over time.
It does happen over time, and it does happen gradually. It's this liberation from my attachment to the external, too, is part of what starts to occur, is that I am not that. I am not the external, which is hard to do because I don't want to give it up. I want to be part of that. It's like that's kind of my birthright, you know, it's like all of that stuff.
You know, one of those perceptions and one of those senses that you develop along the way with this path is you mature your discernment. So it's not like you're giving up something, you're recognizing a different something. So I think in the quality that it's speaking about in this particular chamber, it's saying the form of the consciousness of the void, which is yourself, is not something for you to fear or for you to be afraid of or to put in awe of. It is something that is your guide. And he is therefore your own form, and he is a guide through whom you can realize your own genuine nature.
So I have, if I can stand in that position, then I can recognize the guide around me.
Bingo.
Right?
Bingo.
So the more I'm there, but then I become a voyager, and as I learned early on when I came here, and you were in the very same space when I learned this, is the voyager, by definition, has no home.
Exactly.
The voyager has no place to rest their head.
Exactly.
But you get freedom.
Well, you recognize your nature.
You recognize your nature.
And that brings with it what we call freedom.
Well, it is a liberation.
It is a liberation.
It is a liberation.
But it is a liberation of what from what? That's where we're describing here.
That's right.
Well, you know, I like to throw in another little esoteric piece of information. You know, I've often felt that EJ provided a second octave to the first octave that Gurdjieff presents. And it's interesting, it's particularly interesting to me that Caritas is referred to here.
Yes.
Give us a little talk on Caritas.
Yes, please.
So what we learn from Beelzebub's tales to his grandson is that Beelzebub actually was from the planet Caritas, which was very close to the center. That is perhaps the uncreated absolute of which the first iteration is the planet Caritas, which Beelzebub has his arising upon before he contemplates rebellion and is therefore exiled to one of the most remote solar systems of the universe, remote from the center, that is, to the planet Mars, and has subsequent descents to the planet Earth to kind of work out his salvation. And, of course, over a period of maybe, 80,000 years or something like that, he gradually redeems himself and is forgiven by the Absolute because of his meritorious efforts and is able to return to the planet Caritas. And in that sense, although he was liberated at the beginning, as we all are, through force of circumstances, he found himself in this remote solar system and then through his own efforts was able to liberate himself and return to the planet Caritas, but of course with eminently more recognition of his merits. So I think that's kind of an interesting reference to Caritas. And also, I might just say for myself, you know, thinking along those lines, when I read about this guide and this gemstone of black, first of all, Caritas purportedly, one suggestion is that Caritas actually means black pearl. So, you know, we try to find the pearl of great price. In this case, it's black for a variety of you know, the void and all that kind of stuff. But it's interesting that as I'm following this, and we're confronted with a guide, we think of an individual like Beelzebub serving as a guide who was exiled,
right,
worked out his salvation as we're doing, his transformation, and actually gradually was reunited to the source of his arising. So just comment.
Yep. Then when I remember glancing to Beelzebub's and I hit this term, I also remember there was a discussion of that it was also related to the idea of the beloved.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in there at all?
Boy, David, I can't put my finger on that right away.
Yeah, and it's just that it's a recollection from somebody who's been through it maybe once versus someone who's actually studied it. And that, of course, brings to mind death comes as a lover.
Exactly, which we're going to have a much longer conversation
Absolutely,
about.
But
I saw Dan picking up the phone. Are there comments that we need to make sure we get to hear? Please go ahead.
So Piff says, in the moment when we recognize that we create the form we see attain, if only momentarily, freedom from form. In the same way that once one recognizes one is in a chamber, all of a sudden the door to leave the chamber also appears.
Yes.
That's part of what I was trying to get at with this idea of what is freedom, right?
Yeah.
And
thank you.
That's very good. Thank you, Piff. Very good.
One other little piece I want to throw, because it doesn't occur in other places that I recall in the text. It's rarely noted, and it uses the phrase, the first time it comes up is well, I can see it in 10, but that's not where the first place was.
Okay.
The expression has to do with falling in error. And
uh-huh.
I'm looking for the first place that it shows up in this
chamber. That did come up before. You're
and,
right.
And it has been some, yes.
Yeah, five.
Is it five?
Do not fall into error.
Yes. And do not fall into error through belief in their reality or form. And then in 10 it says, and you must have faith now in the absolute truth and not fall into error. So these are a little bit of contradictory terms. You must have faith in absolute truth. And before in 5, it says, do not fall into error through belief in their reality or form. So there's some very... there's evidence here that it is to be an understood, measured response, not a gut response.
Well, I think in part it goes back to what George is telling us, that the balance starts to change. When you are living more from the essential self, then you can begin to taste the essential self, and you can then have faith in that.
In the absolute truth.
Rather than belief
right.
in the illusory nature of what's around us.
Right. And the fall into error
correct.
Is a direct pull from the Bible, fell from grace into sin. Fall, the fall. And so those words, fall into error, and the use of the word error, as in it's something that you could have done correctly, that was the part that caught my eye, is it implies that there is the potential for knowingness here.
Right.
That there is the potential for knowingness, for understanding, and for a conscious decisions about things, which is not the normal indicated response in the second stage of transit through the macro dimensions.
Correct.
Usually habit. In this case, it's talking about something different. I just wanted to point that out.
No, that's very good. And it reminds us of what we talked about before, George, the habits will carry you through.
That's right. And by the way, I might say that the whole study of this guidebook really helps us to begin to formulate or systematize an understanding of what the 18 primordial habits of the essential self are. That is where we start from in absolute truth by being introduced to each one of these different characters, each of these different entities, so to speak. And so it gives us an opportunity to gradually imagine that we ourselves are that, and that thereby we have that particular habit. And in this way, we create our own karma. We are subject to absolute truth and not to the vagaries of the world of sound and motion.
Well, that poses a very interesting viewpoint then, if you look at the first four paragraphs of this. First, the nourishment quality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from whence does nourishment then come?
Right.
But from our own understanding and faith in that.
Isn't there also a way in which all of us were somehow born or had our arising on the planet Caritas, and then we had a falling out? We had something that we did and that caused us to fall into the lower realms or the more remote corners of the habitable universe, and we're working through that journey, you know, the voyage, working through the karma, the layers or the levels or, you know, whatever, however it's visualized. You know, another one of EJ's formulations is that the journey is the destination.
Well, let me ask
in other words, in childhood, you know, as children, we start out, in essence, we start out as essential beings.
EJ calls it the Great Betrayal.
The Great Trail.
Betrayal.
The Great Betrayal or the Great Trail?
No, the Great Betrayal. It's
trail.
When we forsake our essence in order to live in personality.
Right.
Yeah,
and we have to work our way back to that point in our life in order to...
That's what a question I was going to have for you and Ivan then is... If we are this pure divine spark, why aren't we exactly the same then?
Well, the way that all works out is at the moment of our conception and up to the Great Betrayal, we perceive ourselves basically as immaterial light. But at the moment of the Great Betrayal, our physical body begins to harden into something called conditioning. And then momentum drives this conditioning, and we really become hard-boiled eggs. I mean, we never really recover the yolk. But what we're attempting to do in our transformational efforts is to gradually relax the mind and the body so that the spirit can be released and gradually ripen the physical body, so it's a vessel serving an inhabiting being, that kind of a thing.
Except even in the highest of invocational spaces that we have gotten into, in those spaces, the nature of the individuals around me, there seems to be terrific harmony, yet at the same point, terrific uniqueness. Each has like a certain unique post that they come up with.
So is your question, why is there individuation?
Yes, it is.
And the question of individuation only has a good answer if you understand the wholeness of divinity first. It's as there is all and one that you can say, this little piece called Patricia Elizabeth inhabits in this manner, in this time, in this condition, for this particular aspect. Not necessarily willingly or consciously. That's the part that's really intriguing to me.
I'm not asking that.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
The way I've formulated this for myself, in the heart of the great central sun, we are one without differentiation. It's
right.
Only in the here and now that we acquire individuation because, you know, again, both of these processes, unity and on the one end of the spectrum and on the other end, multiplicity and diversity, these two processes occur simultaneously and incessantly. And all we're trying to do is separate those two experiences, blend them together to create our own third force of reconciliation that leads to the development of personal being. And that's what I think EJ has somehow seems to demonstrate to us.
You just say that he also talks about the fractioning, you know, the fragmenting starting at the absolute. You know, there's the first, what are they, in Kabbalah they call it, contraction, something, you know.
Iteration.
Yeah, symptom or something like that. As the beingness falls, I guess is a good way of looking at it. There's a fractioning and fractioning and fractioning and fractioning until we have the material world and the uniqueness and fragmentation that we have here.
And it produces dissonance in that unless we find ways to create resonance or harmony.
Yeah, I was trying to remember that. The musical comparison is that there are octaves, that there are, you know, all these descending octaves, but that there's the same constant structure of it, that form, you know. Mm-hmm. It has a fixed form. And then, of course, you know, all of this form evidently is emptiness or void, and all of the void is emptiness is form. And that's in the Buddhist, I think it's a Buddhist formulation.
As far as the formlessness of this form goes, I would like to invite the unified shared body of this configuration to take part in whatever form of readings that you can participate in. I know they occur online. I know they occur in the orbs. I know they occur in the, what's that thing called, it, second line? Ashram, and I know that you can do it with each other if you have each other's phone numbers or Skype or whatever. But in addition to our understanding, it is necessary to make effort. And that's what I'm suggesting that we all do on behalf of all beings everywhere and for the being of Lily Nova and all other beings in need at this time. So I'd like to complete the evening with, most of us won't know the whole clear light prayer, so we won't do that. How about we do the four lines? Would that be good? Before that, we will hear one more comment.
Jeff says, the first impression that shocked the psyche, physical and mental, became the unconscious magnetic center for the psyche, aka the fall of which we speak. Could be at the time of birth, could be fixed even in the womb.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
That's, yeah. That's important people get that. Do you want to type this in for us, please, Dan?
Why don't you type it in, and then we'll
do it
recite
together,
it.
Yeah, we're going to do it together, but first he's going to type it in. Because we're so multi-capacitated here. Sort of.
I don't know if they hear, do they hear it in the light?
Yeah.
I guess.
They do.
Okay.
Is it there? You got it, Dan?
What? Ivan waved?
No. Just type in the four lines, please.
He's got three of them in. One more to go.
Oh, yay.
There we go. They're all in.
Yay.
Okay, so...
I'm moving my microphone away so that I can hear all of you.
So, you ready? Yeah. Ivan? Okay, so, Pat, you start us off then.
Oh.
Phenomena
is
illusion.
Neither
attracted nor repelled, not making any sudden move. My habits will carry me through.
Thank you for coming. We'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Good night, everyone.
At 7 o'clock.
Good night, thanks.